keeping them patient either through very strong relationships, good rates in contracting and subsidies, or offering products that aren't network dependent so you can get a wedge in and keep them happy while the network builds were really key learnings for us early on.
Hey everyone, it is Nico here from Redox. I just wanted to drop a quick line and ensure that you have listened to the first part of this episode where we lay out the context for platform businesses in healthcare. Additionally, Seth Joseph and I do a lot more to introduce the great founders and CEOs who are sharing their stories of their platform businesses with us today. First off, we have Anuradhi Mathur from Sempre Health. We have Carlo Perez from Swift Medical and Mitesh Rao from Omni Health. So if you haven't listened to the prior episode, pop back over to that one, give it a listen, and then we'll join you back here. And with that, I'll hand it back over to Seth to take us back into the action.
I'd like to shift to one of the thorniest subjects for platforms, and that is how to solve for the chicken and egg problem. Any platform business that relies on network effects can become incredibly powerful and really scalable. But figuring out how to solve for that when there's little value up front in the platform itself can be a real challenge. So I'd love to hear how you guys thought about solving for the chicken and egg problem. Did you run into this, and how did you, or how are you working your way through this? Carlo, would love to put this first one to you.
Prior to this, we ran a couple of businesses out of the Valley, and those were multi-sided platforms. And the real challenge that we had there was exactly what you're describing. It was connecting contractors to folk that want to do home renovations. And in that business, it was literally take your budget, split it between the two sides, and then try to figure out how you grow each side of those with two completely different marketing campaigns, which have completely different go-to-markets. And then per the previous question, figure out how to make sure each side is vetted, merge those together, match them properly, and then ensure, of course, that there is enough supply to reach the demand that you just spent, you know, half a quarter of your budget on building. So the problem is a massive one. It's probably why of advice that I've been given around multi-sided platforms is, I think that it was a singular word. It was don't. Was the advice from a VC once. So when we got to Swift Medical, the idea of Swift as a multi-sided platform and the power of the network that we would create and the value of the effects for each end user were obviously massive. And I think that the core differentiator between what Swift is today and what maybe earlier ideas of Swift existed as in previous businesses really lies inside of just saying, well, let's just focus. Let's stay exclusively focused on one side of this. And is that possible? As I said in my previous response, it turned out that for wound care, it was absolutely possible. We found the ability to focus on one side of the platform, make sure that we had built something incredibly sticky. We've been doing that for years. And I think it really creates two core outcomes for Swift as we look to that larger vision around being an MSP, which is really relies around two things as far as we're concerned. Number one is just generating supply. And for us, that is essentially bedside assessments and patients with wounds. Wound care is just a massive challenge for all healthcare organizations, every bedside in the US and on the planet. So that is the unfortunate side of the supply. But as it pertains to how we've looked at being able to help those folk and then create supply for our network, it was, well, if we can get to as many of those bedsides as fast as possible, we position ourselves really to be able to help as much as possible. And of course, ultimately help as many patients as we can. The second part of being able to focus exclusively on one side that was so interesting is that we have focused just on driving workflow and making sure that our workflow is comprehensive, sticky, is integrated. I haven't described our product. It's basically like a tricorder for wounds. And I've also realized that saying tricorder really dates me back to and silos me into people who know about Star Trek and who don't. So at the end of the day, if we understand that if we create an awesome product, our users will stay with our product, both because it is part of their healthcare system, but also because it's just a really awesome experience. And so we really focus on generating user love. Fast forward 5 years later, and it's really positioned us incredibly for the opportunity to then take those patients who need help and connect them as broadly as we can to experts that can help.
Nico, I'd love to hear about how Redox thought about the chicken and egg problem and solving for it.
When you're thinking about a platform business, you can envision the value that you can add when you're at scale. If you had all of the supply side and you had all the demand side, then tremendous value can be added between those. But you've got to figure out early on how to add value to simply one side without the need for the other. And I think that's the crux of solving this chicken or egg problem, is identifying who your constituents are and what you can do for one side without the need to have the opposite side there at the beginning. And so for us, we looked at health systems and developers and experimented on what value can we add for each of those constituents without having a mass of the other side yet. And we realized that that doesn't work for health systems. Essentially, every time we talked to a health system, they said, this is an interesting thing that you're building. You know, interoperability is a problem for us and we need help with it. But who are we going to connect to through Redox? It was kind of the question. Like, there's nothing on the other side. It was like selling the first fax machine. So we kept scratching our heads when we're talking to health systems about that problem. Meanwhile, when we talked to software developers, they said, oh, you can help with integration. I have a set of 5 customers that I'm trying to do integrations with right now. Maybe you could help with that. And so our value proposition at the beginning was very much different than it is today. At the beginning, our value proposition was simply outsourcing. So software developers looked at us to essentially take work off of their plate, you know, work that they could certainly do on their own, but it allowed them to focus on, you know, building product features instead of building integrations. And then we built the integrations for them. Over time, that allowed us to acquire these health systems. And as we acquired health systems, our value proposition really started to transition from outsourcing to joining a network. So, you know, our first year or two, people would be making the decision, do I build this on my own or do I work with Redox and have them build it for me? Nowadays, people aren't really considering it that way. They say, do I build this on my own one by one, or do I join a network of 700 health systems that are already connected and I can just turn on integrations? And so that's how the value proposition has really changed to the point where we can start to actually realize the vision of having a network to solve this problem. Whereas at the beginning, focusing on just the developer side of the market, we were simply outsourcing and adding value kind of one by one. And so I think that's the crux of solving the problem, is identifying who your stakeholders are and how you can add value to one of those stakeholders without the need for the other, and then focusing on that until you can build enough mass of your network to actually provide the value that you envisioned for it.
I'm sure this question of answering the chicken and egg problem is going to be one of the most highlighted areas of interest. Anuradhi Mathesh, would love to get your responses to how you guys thought about solving the chicken and the egg problem.
Sempre, we're matching the supply of dollars from pharmaceutical companies to the demand for those dollars from payers and patients, right? And so early on, I think we realized a few things. One is we can subsidize or seed one of those sides, but not the other. We also realized that you can't really sign up a health plan for the platform if there are no drugs for them to choose from, similar to the problem that Nico was describing. And we also realized that, you know, the payer side is frankly, I think, more precious to us, in that the unit that we monetize on is transactions or prescription fills, and we're so reliant on the payer for that. So we made the decision early on to fund the discounts on certain medications ourselves, in lieu of having those brand teams or those manufacturers on the platform. And this allowed us to, I think, very early on, sign up health plans who wanted discounts on those meds without having to also make that second sale. That kind of led to the health plan coming on the platform, their patient volume coming on the platform, which then really allowed us to go back to those manufacturers and to other manufacturers to bring on their portfolio of drugs. So we're starting to see that flywheel effect, which is patients love the discounts and the dollars. This makes us super sticky for the payers, especially because we're free. And then this brings additional life sciences companies on the platform with more dollars in the system, and the cycle continues.
For us, it was very straightforward. We had to sit there and do the balance of supply versus demand, and what do you go for first? Because we're a traditional marketplace, we, of course, went for the supply side to start. Can't really have a marketplace if you don't have anything on it. And so we focused on the marketplace supply side initially, brought on what we felt was enough of a critical amount of partners that we could approach the buy side, and then start bringing on data partners who wanted access to the data. And so now it's a back and forth dance. For, I would say, the first 6 months of our efforts were really back and forth, building up each side slowly, being able to match need to demand and vice versa, Now that the everything is fully fledged and running, we're focusing on both sides simultaneously. But there was definitely a very purposeful approach initially in trying to think how to get things kickstarted and get it going.
That's great. I think we've heard a few different strategies here that can be applicable for folks who are looking to stand up platforms in healthcare. We heard a pretty clear one-sided strategy to develop services for one side. We heard about essentially an outsourced approach to building connectivity between two sides. We heard about subsidies, and we also heard about focusing on the supply side first. So Mathesh, to build off of what you were just describing in terms of kind of growing each side a little bit by a little bit, and Anurati, to your point as well, once a platform has passed sort of the chicken and egg problem and is starting to create some stickiness with its users, it can run into the crossing the chasm problem, which for platforms can exist on both sides, and so can be particularly challenging. How have you guys thought about moving past those very early adopters who are really interested in evaluating new technology and are excited about it into the early majority? How do you think about crossing that chasm on both sides? And have you guys gotten to this point? And how do you think about leveraging each side to achieve virality?
So I think we are approaching that point, or at that point right now, where, you know, for us, it's about reputation and the early adopters being able to be referenceable customers, right? To be able to show that we are definitely a platform that can be trusted and that can do this work in a secure, compliant, transparent manner. And so now we don't actually do a whole lot of, call it marketing or outbound. We're focused mostly on the inbounds that come through our existing partners who are referring their peers to us. To me, that's one of the best approaches to sales, where your existing clients are so happy with the work that you're doing that they're calling up other hospital systems, other peers of theirs, and saying, hey, this is a company that we're working with that we like, that we've been able to trust, that's delivering for us.
Any other folks want to jump in on this question of leveraging the network you have to achieve virality?
We were inspired by a lot of other kind of developer tool companies, like thinking of Twilio or even AWS back in the day. And what we saw was that their success came from working with startups, because startups are the quintessential early adopters and innovators in the space who are resource constrained, and they're trying to solve these problems in the best way they can. And so we went after startups first, and that meant going to accelerators and incubators around the country and basically just having a product that would work well for them at a price point that a startup could consume. Once we had startups using it, hopefully some of those startups turn into great companies and end up growing with us. If you look at Twilio, for instance, they had Uber on it really early on, and that allowed a lot of the growth. Same thing with Redox. We got some early startups that we were their first implementation, and then they started scaling to dozens. So in doing that, your credibility increases because those early adopters are becoming more credible themselves. You're getting some more experience under your belt, which is great. The product that you've built, you can start maturing that and covering more use cases and having just a more stable and mature product. And as I mentioned earlier, our value proposition started to change, where we were actually able to deliver the network effects in our business. And that allowed us to help cross the chasm on the supply side, to utilize all that momentum that was built up to secure the early majority type groups, you know, bigger vendors that were already doing integrations on their own. They already had teams of it. But because we became an expert in the space by working with all these startups and growing our footprint of health systems, it allowed us to kind of help cross that chasm to these bigger groups. So that's how we thought about it. And essentially, kind of the core mechanics of our business, and that more apps bring more health systems, and more health systems bring more apps, like the virality was able to really accelerate through that process.
Really, when it comes to the question of virality, our kind of core unlocking moment there was, hey, have you heard of this product? As a nurse, I utilize this in my skilled nursing facility. I use this in my home health agency. This is great. The nursing and the medical community in general, they really band together, especially around wound care, which is maybe a new subject for most people. So we experienced some of that user-to-user virality at the start. And then we started to notice the second level, which was hospitals being one of them, but beyond that into long-term post-acute care. And customers start to say, well, I've got this interesting set of financial outcomes, and I've got these awesome clinical outcomes. That is actually really valuable to them from an organization to organization marketing perspective. And so we started to see requests from our users to help with that type of growth and help them market their businesses to organizations that were completely outside of their space. So a home health agency reaching out to an upstream hospital referral, a wound clinic reaching to its partnered skilled nursing organizations, and drawing us into the world of that intercommunication through the integrated cross-continuum layer that we've built. So we've seen this kind of interesting two-step growth, and we've been keen to see where that goes.
Sempre really does leverage the cross-side and the same-side network effects. We know that health plans are ultimately life sciences customers. And so there's immense influence that these payers have on these pharmaceutical companies and brands, which we really make it a point to leverage. So when payers are requesting drugs to be on the Sempre platform, they're having a significant impact, and it really allows us to multiply our sales and BD efforts and leverage chief pharmacy officers across the country to bring on additional medications on the platform. And similarly, these plans are competing with each other, but they're also very influential. I mean, the Blues network is really vast. One Blue signing up has really led to several dozens of Blues signing up. Thinking back, you know, we did a press release with one of our life sciences partners a few years ago, and I think it was probably the single most impactful moment for all the other life sciences deals that were currently in flight. Really accelerated things. And I think it was a learning moment for us that these are the things that'll help us kind of accelerate the flywheel effect that I was mentioning earlier and kind of bring that virality to life for us.
So we've now talked about network effects. We've talked about business models. We've solved for the chicken and egg problem and about how to create virality to really get the flywheel going. So now that we've solved a ton of problems and we know how to build multi-sided platforms in healthcare, we just have to figure out how to finance them. Nico, you mentioned earlier that it's easy to envision the value that you can add when you're at scale. So the market potential of platforms should, in some respects, be easy to pitch. On the other hand, solving for all of the challenges we've talked about can be really daunting. And while platforms are built to scale and can deliver increasing returns to scale, the flip side of that is that their revenue and other financials may not look as compelling in the early stages. As a result, pitching the story to investors can be challenging. You guys have all raised capital. You've all been successful at that piece. Have you run into any challenges in pitching the platform story? And what have you found resonates with investors? Nico, I'd like to put this one to you first.
I think pitching to investors these new platform style business models can be pretty difficult. Investors should be skeptical because they're very hard to build. It's very hard to solve that chicken or egg problem and then actually cross the chasm on both sides of your network. So the way that we did it from the beginning was we tried to articulate the vision as to why a platform like this should exist in the world. So the way that we did that was to kind of draw out what that flywheel diagram looks like, where we're going to add value to what constituent, and then how will that value accelerate into more value. So we drew this out on a PowerPoint slide and basically used this to talk through how the business model could and should work. So if you just imagine boxes and lines, and each box is kind of a constituent and where they're getting additional value, and then each line is what value is being transferred. And then we use that diagram to actually look at our own data and see if we can validate any of those value transfers and say, you know, this is how much faster we're able to do an integration, for instance, or this is what our conversion rate is between this step and the next step. And so we actually use data to show that pieces of this were starting to work. Early on, so our first couple of rounds, we really raised based on that vision, and we attracted investors who were bought into that vision. And so what that meant was revenue generation and profitability wasn't the most important metrics that our investors were holding our feet to the fire around. They were metrics having to do with the acceleration of our flywheel. And that was really, really important, is making sure that we had investors at the table who were bought into that and weren't suddenly saying, hey, you need to be profit maximizing suddenly, when our goal was to build the network in such a way where we can start to achieve network effects. We have always kind of looked at this graph for our business of customer versus network growth. And early on, both of those things were kind of linear. So we would acquire a customer, they'd help us grow the network, but kind of at the same rate. What we saw in 2018 was that those lines started to diverge, and that customer acquisition actually led to exponential network growth. That's when we started to actually see that network effects were starting to happen. And that helped us go and raise our Series C, which we closed about a year ago now. I think that's the most important part of communicating with investors is, you know, making sure they understand the vision, that they're bought into the vision of the platform, and that you can measure that with your own data and prove it to investors. For us, that meant building relationships with investors over a long period of time, showing them that data, coming back 6 months later, showing them that we're progressing with it. And then maybe a year later, we can actually raise money from them because they've seen us actually executing on that vision.
Anurati, if I recall correctly, you explicitly talked about creating a two-sided network, and I would love to hear your response to this question.
There have been many investors who get scared by a company like Sempre. We are in healthcare, first and foremost. We have to make two enterprise sales, not just one, before there's value in the system. And frankly, I think it's a good way for us to weed out, you know, the investors who will really get behind what we're doing and understand kind of the potential to be really big versus those who won't. You know, when we first started pitching Sempre, we used to describe drug affordability as a major inefficiency in the system. We know there are dollars. Pharmaceutical companies spend billions on traditional drug coupons a year, but still, even now, you hear about drug affordability around insulins and many of the chronic and specialty therapeutic classes as something that's in the news every day. So we know those dollars aren't really getting in the hands of patients. And when those coupons are, they're often at odds with the health plan and the health system more broadly. So, you know, we were very sure that those dollars could be better spent if only there was a way to facilitate getting them to the right place for the right medications. And so as we pitched that, I think it made a lot of sense to our current investors, definitely got it. And others in healthcare started, I think, understand our thesis. And when investors started to really ask to see evidence of low churn, reducing sales cycles, inflection points in growth, those are signals to us that they really understand the defensibility behind Sempre and I think really the growth potential. And it is true. I think the network we've built is difficult to replicate, and there isn't really an affordability solution out there that's kind of doing the supply and demand matching the way Sempre is. So, you know, I think those are the things we look for an investor to understand when we're out pitching.
I'd love to get from each of you, what's the biggest lesson you've learned about running a platform business that you wished you would have known when you started it and you think might benefit others out there who are just starting their journey?
So I would say that the biggest piece advice I give is that if you're building a platform with network effects, you're catering to more than one master here. You have clients on multiple levels, and it really behooves you to think about both your product, your roadmap, but also your go-to-market strategy to being able to cater to these multiple entities. It's not as easy as a straightforward SaaS business where you're selling one offering to one client type and you just have to grow that piece. There's a lot that you have to do to balance things out, and you're constantly playing both sides of this. And so being really purposeful, but paying attention to the needs and understanding at the end of the day, if your product is that good, it will let you win. So I can't emphasize that enough. Pay attention to the product, pay attention to the customers, and build from there.
The biggest thing that we've learned over building a few MSPs is really that ultimately, if you keep your guiding North Star, not as how do I monetize, but rather focus on the core product and the user love of that product on those both sides. In particular, if you can on one side, if you can't on both at the same time, that really is what it comes down to at the end. And that will take you to the reaches of where your vision goes. So focus on the user, use it as your North Star, and really make it all about the product.
I think one thing I wish I'd known in the beginning was that the early days are really about keeping both sides patient. As you build up scale, I think you're inevitably going to have your early adopters who have bought into what you're trying to do, but are so early on that they haven't yet realized some of what you've most likely pitched them. And so keeping them patient, either through very strong relationships, good rates in contracting and subsidies, or to Nico's earlier point, offering products that aren't network dependent so you can get a wedge in and keep them happy while the network builds, were really key learnings for us early on and things that I think are really required to get out of that chicken and the egg problem.
So we've had this great discussion. We've talked about platforms. We've heard about network effects, about governance. We've talked business models. Here's a question that I'm still sorting through myself, and I'd love to get your perspective on. Outside of healthcare, we have these organizations, these multi-sided platforms like Facebook, eBay, Amazon, Uber, Airbnb. In healthcare, we've really only got a few. So we've talked about Surescripts. Certainly, I think there are a couple of other good examples in CoverMyMeds, Flatiron Health, and GoodRx, but there really aren't many more at all. Why is that? What's so different about healthcare?
I think the healthcare market is just such a terribly complex system. At its core, if we think about how it works, it's a market based off of what economists call derived demand. So in most markets, when you know, if you're selling apples at the farmer's market, people understand the value that they're going to get from buying an apple. They have a perception of that, and then they can create a demand from it. So that's direct demand. In healthcare, we don't have a direct demand for the actual care itself. We have direct demand for health. And we hope that the care that we, you know, pay for from providers and the care teams that work with us will give us the health that we need. And what that means is that there's complex payment models. So that brings payers into the mix. There's tons of complexity that bring a mix of stakeholders in. Figuring out who's going to pay for the platform is something that I think is a challenge. The next thing is really around privacy. The data that we're working with in healthcare is some of the most sensitive data out there. Beyond your demographics and things that you can typically use to steal someone's identity, we have personal health information, which, you know, includes your medications and your diagnoses and things that can be really sensitive about your actual health. And then finally, technology adoption in healthcare is about a decade behind. We actually had to have the government step in and mandate and incentivize providers to actually adopt technology, electronic health records. You know, as you discussed earlier, starting in 2008, we started to see those mandates come into place. And, you know, now we have near ubiquity adoption of technology, but it wasn't adopted like most technology is, where, you know, it has some sort of huge efficiency gains that really pulls the majority of people into the adoption cycle. What we saw was the government mandated that people adopt technology that brought them into the technology adoption cycle. And because of that, we're a bit behind. How do you either move through that evolution or possibly how can we leapfrog it and use modern technology right now without kind of going through that stepwise process?
Awesome. Thanks very much, Nico.
Cool. Well, this was a lot of fun, Seth.
Yeah. Thanks very much again for having me. And I know that Carlo and Anurati Mathesh were all super pleased to be here. So my hope is that some of the listeners of the Redox podcast, well, I suppose, one, get excited about platform businesses in healthcare. Two, if they've already started a platform business in healthcare, they got something useful and learned something today. And three, that if we don't have people who are already thinking about or starting platforms, that those who are in healthcare really understand the power of platforms and understand and are more receptive and get jazzed to sign up with platforms that solve major problems in healthcare.
Awesome. We'll leave it there. Thanks so much, Seth.
Thanks, Nico.
Hey, everyone. Nico here again. Thank you so much for listening to the Redox podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on our next episode with Dr. Sylvia Rahm, who is, of course, the Chief Innovation Officer at Atlantic Health System, a 7-hospital organization based in Northern New Jersey. That episode should be out next week-ish, whenever we get to it. Until then, keep your hands to yourself. Thanks.